Blog Talk Radio.
We got the house!
Pods handles the driving. Pack at your pace, store your things until you're ready, then we deliver to your new home, across town or across the country. Pods, your personal moving.
This is Dr. Chinchilla Donesia, the commissioner of WBNN. The those of you that have been having trouble tuning into WBNN's programming due to phone service provider issues with Metro, T-Mobile, or Cricket, I have a solution for you. Go to the Google Play Store or the Apple Play Store, download the TextNow app onto your cell phone, choose a phone number, and then you will be able to tune into all of WBNN's programming. I am the Honorable Dr. Chinchilla J.
I want to ask you a question, and that is, what is in your life's blueprint? The building is not well erected without a good, sound and solid blueprint. Number one in your life's blueprint should be a deep belief in your own dignity, your own worth, and your own somebodiness. Don't allow anybody to make you feel that you are nobody, and always feel that your life has ultimate significance. Secondly, in your life's blueprint, you must have as a basic principle the determination to achieve excellence in your various fields of endeavor. It falls your lot to be a street sweeper. Sweep streets like Michelangelo painted pictures. Sweep streets like Beethoven composed music. Sweep streets like Shakespeare wrote poetry. Finally, in your life's blueprint must be a commitment to the eternal principles of beauty, love, and justice. Don't allow anybody to pull you so low as to make you hate them. Don't allow anybody to cause you to lose your self-respect to the point that you do not struggle for justice. However young you are, you have a responsibility to seek to make your nation a better nation in which to live. You have a responsibility to seek to make life better for everybody.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to WBNN's 10th annual tribute to the Honorable Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., a celebration of his life tonight. He is a legacy, and his legacy is living on year after year, decade after decade, and we're going to honor him tonight, and we thank all of you that are already listening. And we invite you to invite others to tune in tonight to this program honoring the legacy of the late, great Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Now, those of you that are listening, I'm not going to assume that you know everything about Dr. King because so many people don't. But we all should know that he was definitely born on January 15th, 1929, because every year we celebrate his birthday, and some people don't know it's actually January 15th because we celebrate it. It's a federal holiday now, but it's celebrated on today, which is Monday, and people have off work and everything else, so you get to have a day off on this federal holiday. And it's a good thing they did make it a federal holiday. It was long overdue when they did, but it is now. So our wonderful man of integrity, of stature, of, there's so many adjectives to describe Dr. King. But let me tell you a little bit about him. Again, he was born January 15th, 1929. He was an American Baptist minister. He was also an activist, and he was and still is one of the most prominent leaders in the civil rights movement. And, you know, I really consider him the most prominent one during that movement because he did so much in those years. And that was before I was born, when he first started out in the civil rights movement, because he started out in that movement in 1955, everybody, until his assassination, when he was assassinated April 4th, 1968. And he was born into a family of a minister. He was the son of a minister. And Dr. King is someone we can look at and say, wow, he was a great in so many ways. He was great because he was very intelligent at a young age. He was intelligent, and he was filled with wisdom. And at a young age, he saw things that needed to change within this country as far as the rights of our people, speaking of black people. So he saw what needed to be done, and he wasn't one to just sit back and look and say, oh, well, this is shouldn't be happening, or I'm sick of this and that, and complain and criticize. He was a man that got up and did something. So faith without works is dead. So he was a man of faith and believed in God, and he put his faith into action by forming groups, by going out marching and protesting. So he was a man of action. And that's what it takes today for us to be men and women of action, not just words only, but action. Put your words into action. So you have to be like Dr. King and do what he did. If you want to make a difference in your community, in your society, in society as a whole, even on your job, you have to be proactive. You have to speak up and speak out against every injustice, whether it's racism, whether it's discrimination, no matter what it is. If you see someone being mistreated, speak up. Don't be afraid to be a voice. And Dr. King, he was always definitely a voice of many voices, a voice for the voiceless, and he did not stop. He kept doing and going until the end. So he's a great man. And we're going to talk more about him tonight. You're going to hear different excerpts from Dr. King. And you're going to find out things that you may have not known. And sit back and enjoy this wonderful, wonderful 10th annual tribute to the late, great legend of a man, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. I am Dr. Chinchilla Janice.
I've seen them so often. I remember in Birmingham, Alabama, we were in that majestic struggle there. We would move out of the 16th Street Baptist Church day after day. By the hundreds, we would move out. Bull Connor would tell them to send the dogs for us, and they did come. But we just went before the dogs, singing, "Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around."
the next would say, turn your fire hoses on. As I said to you the other night, Bull Connor didn't know history. He knew a kind of physics that somehow didn't relate to the transphysics that we knew about. And that was the fact that there was a certain kind of fire that no water could put out. And we went before the fire hoses. We had known water. If we were Baptists or some other denomination, we had been immersed. If we were Methodists and some other, we had been sprinkled. But we knew water. That couldn't stop us. And we just went on before the dogs, and we would look at them, and we'd go on before the water hoses, and we would look at it, and we'd just go on singing, over my head, I see freedom in the air. Then we would be thrown into paddy wagons, and sometimes we were stacked in there like sardines in a can. They would throw us in, and old Bull would say, take them off. They did, and we were just gone in the paddy wagon singing, we shall overcome. And every now and then we'd get in jail, and we'd see the jailer looking through the windows, being moved by our prayer. Being moved by our words and our songs. There was a power there which Bull Connor couldn't just adjust to. So we ended up transforming Bull into a steer, and we won our struggle in Birmingham.
Wow, thank you so much for that. Now, a little bit more about Dr. King. Dr. King participated in and led marches for the right to vote. And how many of you vote today? You know, he fought for our right to vote because there was a time that blacks could not vote. We did not have a voice in the voting arena. Now we do. But so many black people still do not vote because they think that voting doesn't count or our vote does not matter. But I urge you to get out and vote, people. Guess what? Preliminaries are coming up. The primaries are coming up, and you need to vote in this election. So get out and use and utilize your right to vote. He also led marches for desegregation, labor rights, and other civil rights. He oversaw the 1955 Montgomery bus boycott and later became the first president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, better known as the SCLC. And as president of the SCLC, he led the unsuccessful Albany movement in Albany, Georgia, and helped organize some of the nonviolent 1963 protests in Birmingham, Alabama, and that was the year I was born. King was one of the leaders of the 1963 March on Washington, where he delivered his I Have a Dream speech, which so many people know, and that's the only speech that so many people know. But we don't play that here during our tribute to Dr. King. We play ones that you've never heard before. The civil rights movement achieved pivotal legislative gains in the Civil Rights Act of 1964, Voting Rights Act of 1965, and the Fair Housing Act of 1968. While some say that Albany movement was unsuccessful, but in my eyes, there's no movement that's unsuccessful, because if you're doing something, guess what? You're already succeeding, because people that don't do anything, they're the ones that are unsuccessful.
And So this morning I speak to you on this issue because I'm determined to take the gospel seriously. It's time for all people of conscience to call upon America. There is at the outset a very obvious,
come home, America,
an almost facile connection between the war in Vietnam and the struggle I and others have been waging in America. A few years ago, there was a shining moment in that struggle. It seemed as if there was a real promise of hope for the poor, both black and white, through the poverty program. Then came the build-up in Vietnam. And I watched the program broken as if it was some idle political plaything of a society gone mad on war. And I knew that America would never invest the necessary funds or energies in rehabilitation of its poor, so long as adventures like Vietnam continue to draw men and skills and money like some demonic destructive suction tube. You may not know it, my friend, but it is estimated that we spend $500,000 to kill each enemy soldier, while we spend only $53 for each person classified as poor. And much of that $53 goes for salaries to people who are not poor. So I was increasingly compelled to see the war as an enemy of the poor and attack it as such. Perhaps the more tragic recognition of reality took place when it became clear to me that the war was doing far more than devastating the hopes of the poor at home. It was sending their sons and their brothers and their husbands to fight and die in extraordinarily high proportions relative to the rest of the population. We were taking the black young men who had been crippled by society, sending them 8,000 miles away to guarantee liberties in Southeast Asia, which they had not found in Southwest Georgia and East Columbia. So we have been repeatedly faced with the cruel irony, watching Negro and white boys on TV screens as they kill and die together for a nation that has been unable to seat them together in the same schoolroom. So we watch them in brutal solidarity, burning the huts of a poor village. We realize that they would hardly live on the same block in Chicago or Atlanta. I have walked among the desperate, rejected, and angry young men. I have told them that Molotov cocktails and rifles would not solve their problem. But they ask, and rightly so, what about Vietnam? They ask if our own nation wasn't using massive doses of violence to solve its problem. And I knew that I could never again raise my voice against the violence of the oppressed in the ghettos without having first spoken clearly to the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government.
All right. Thank you so much. We are going to now take our first caller of the night, and if you would like to comment tonight on the legacy of Dr. King, please press 1. And if you're listening tonight via the World Wide Web and would like to speak tonight, you can call us at 516-453-9133 and press 1. Caller, how are you tonight? Welcome to the 10th annual Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s tribute.
Good evening. It's Genesis Amaris Camp. I am doing well tonight. How are you, Dr. Chinchilla?
I am fine, Genesis.
So
thank you so much for calling in. And your voice sounds a lot better. Well, well, well.
Yeah, it's getting there. It's not 100%, so not trying to put too much stress on it.
Yes.
So when I think about the goodness and all the things that Dr. Martin Luther King did to pave the way for millennials like me as well as others, like, I keep, like, personally, I keep going back to the I Have a Dream speech, and the only reason why is because I'm first-generation American. So a lot of the things that other people who are truly African-American were taught in school, like around Black history, were some of the things that my parents didn't teach me because that wasn't, quote-unquote, their history. Like, for example, the National Negro Anthem and some of those other things like that. So it's like that I had to learn from other people who are truly African-American or were born in the U.S. So whenever I think about I Have a Dream, I think about the dreams that my parents had coming over to America. I think about the dreams that other people who look like me have, and how because Martin Luther King gave such a powerful speech of dreams, it reignited some of the possibilities that we as individuals and Black and brown people can dream, and we can have the same dreams and the same opportunities afforded to us, even though it may take us, you know, a lot longer to achieve some of the things because of our skin color and because of the way that people perceive us, does not mean that it's not reachable.
Yes. That's very awesome, Genesis. I really like that. And you're absolutely right. And, you're talking about the millennials, and you're a millennial. And so, and I have children that are millennials. And, yeah, so I myself like that speech, and everyone likes that speech because there was so much meaning in it. But like I said, unfortunately, that's the speech that most people know, that speech, and that's the only one that they know. But it does say a lot, and it is good to have a vision and have a dream and watch those dreams and visions come to fruition, but we have to do something to make them come to fruition, just as Dr. King fought for us, for those dreams that he had to come to fruition, and they have.
Exactly.
With us, you know, sitting and being able to go into restaurants and hotels that we were not allowed to go in before, you know. So those dreams did come to fruition. He fought so hard for us. And, wow. But and last night on the prelude to Martin Luther King's tribute today, you know, I talked about where have we come? How far have we come? Are we here yet from then to now? Although we're able to do things that we were not able to do then, but how far have we really come? You know, because his dreams for us were so much more, and for us to be able to vote, and we're voting now, but there are so many that don't vote. So we thank Dr. King for what he's done for us, and we have to really take full advantage of the doors that he's opened and the opportunities he's opened up to us that we're not taking advantage of and are not fighting for more justice when there's so much more justice that needs to take place in this country for Black people. So I thank you much, Genesis. Go ahead.
Well, one thing that I think, like from my vantage point, is I think whenever you think about the Black and brown community, sometimes we as a community don't come together as much as other racial groups is the biggest thing that I have seen. Like the Hispanics come together, the Asians come together, and other the Indians come together. But we as African Americans, we would rather build someone else's up before we support some of our own. And I feel like it could be societal norms, or it could be things that are deeply rooted within the African American community that I may not be privy to based on my upbringing and how my parents raised me. As I mentioned, they're not Americans. So I've seen that with some of my friends who are truly African American. The other thing too is knowledge. The knowledge is out there, but they say if you don't go seek the knowledge and you don't gain the wisdom, the understanding, and et cetera, then you're going to perish because you're not going out there to find the truth for yourself. You're out there looking at hearsay and she say versus taking the time to really go beyond the surface level. And it's a lot. And then whenever you think about, you mentioned, okay, have we really paid homage to Dr. Martin Luther King because of where we are now? No, I still feel we have a long ways to go, but it's not just one person or two persons. It's all of us coming together collectively to make change and hold one another accountable and each one reach one. But what are you as an individual doing to build legacy with your family as well as those who are not a part of your family? Are we holding people accountable? Are we teaching them the knowledge? Or are we having the crabs in the barrel mentality where we're taking all of that for ourselves and saying, you know what, I had to get here on my own, so it's time for you to get there on your own. And if we're going to have that type of mentality versus come together collectively, then we're only going to be regressing instead of progressing. And that's my personal opinion and standpoint. And I have seen it happen to me time and time again from a corporate standpoint when I was in corporate America for 15 years. And once I started climbing the corporate ladder, I wanted to help other people that looked like me because I knew what it was to go from the bottom to the top. But once you get to a certain level, people think you did some strange things for a piece of change, or they start acting like you're the house N-word versus like you didn't get there by your brains, your intelligence, and et cetera. And I think that's the problem, speaking from my personal experience and what I have observed in the African-American community. So sometimes even though you want to help your own people, sometimes they don't even appreciate it, but they will go spend their money with someone who doesn't give a, you know, quite frankly, even a damn about them, and they treat them like a damn dog, but they'll build them up before they build up their own, and that's a problem.
Yeah, that's definitely a problem, Genesis. But thank you so much for calling in tonight and giving your thoughts and input, and, you know, I totally agree with you 100%. Thank you so much, Genesis, and I will talk to you soon, and keep listening. And we're going to go ahead and take our next caller. And Genesis, she is a host on this network as well. She's been out on maternity leave. But next month, she will be right here for her show on WBNN. Caller number two, you're live on the air with our 10th annual tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. How are you tonight?
Peace and blessings, Chinchilla. How are you?
Good. How are you, Sister Bessie?
Hi, my sweetheart. You know, I had to be here for Martin Luther King. I love him so much because he was a man of peace. And he also was a Nobel Peace Prize winner. Am I correct?
Yes, he was.
Yes. Well, I want to make a statement because I was on the internet today and there's a statue that they put up for Dr. King and his wife. But the internet is so angry about this statue that they put up. And the statue is supposed to be of Miss Coretta King and Martin Luther King in a hug embrace. But turns out it's a hand holding a penis. This is what everybody is talking about. It's a disgrace. If you look at that statue, it looks like a penis. So someone holding a penis. So guys out there, if you didn't know this, type it in on YouTube about the statue for Martin Luther King today. And a lot of people are angry. I'm angry.
Wow.
And that is a disgrace because you are an artist and you would put something out like that on the day that we celebrate him. You are a disgrace. And if it's okay, I would like to say my poem that I had written a while back for Martin Luther King. Is that okay?
Yes, go ahead.
Never forget the message. This black king wanted peace of all men. Civil rights was his fight. Through this, he made his people fight for their rights. Know this, that he gave his life as he saw his own brothers use a knife to stab him in his back. Never forget the message. Your own government plotted to make him not. Never forget the messenger. While the world is under a calculated pressure, never forget the message. As they pointed at the trees while he was shocked, because this is what they've done to all of our ancestors who spoke against all injustice. Don't forget, they still have us in a matrix of racism. Even though brothers spoke with wisdom, we can't never forget who he was and how they tried to destroy him. For he was a man of peace. Martin Luther King, we must forever be proud to know him, because he was God's son, him. Never forget the message. Never forget the message. He gave the world hope where there was none. Never forget the message. Never forget the message.
Wow. Thank you so much, Sister Bessie. That was absolutely beautiful. Everybody, you need to take heed. Never forget the message. And never forget the messenger, because the messenger is the message. Thank you so much, Sister Bessie, for that. That was a wonderful poem. Now we're going to have a track by international DJ legend, DJ Olasky.
This is the message of the great Buddhist leaders of Vietnam. Recently, one of them wrote these words, and I quote, "Each day the war goes on, the hatred increases in the heart of the Vietnamese and in the hearts of those of humanitarian instinct. The Americans are forcing even their friends into becoming their enemies. It is curious that the Americans, who calculate so carefully on the possibilities of military victory, do not realize that in the process they're incurring deep psychological and political defeat. The image of America will never again be the image of revolution, freedom, and democracy, but the image of violence and militarism," unquote. We continue, "There will be no doubt in my mind and in the mind of the world. We have no honorable intentions in Vietnam. We do not stop our war against the people of Vietnam immediately. The world will be left with no other alternative than to see this as some horrible, clumsy, and deadly game we have decided to play. The world now demands a maturity of America that we may not be able to achieve. It demands that we admit that we have been wrong from the beginning of our adventure in Vietnam, that we have been detrimental to the life of the Vietnamese people. The situation is one in which we must be ready to turn sharply from our present ways. In order to atone for our sins and errors in Vietnam, we should take the initiative in bringing a halt to this tragic war and set a date that we will remove all foreign troops from Vietnam in accordance with the 1954 Geneva Agreement. part of our ongoing commitment might well express itself in an offer to grant asylum to any Vietnamese who fears for his life under the new regime, which included the Liberation Front. Then we must make what reparations we can for the damage we have done. We must provide the medical aid that is badly needed, making it available in this country if necessary. Meanwhile, we in the churches and synagogues have a continuing task while we urge our government to disengage itself from a disgraceful commitment. We must continue to raise our voices and our lives if our nation persists in its perverse ways in Vietnam. We must be prepared to match actions with words by seeking out every creative method of protest possible. These are the times for real choices and not false ones. We are at the moment when our lives must be placed on the line if our nation is to survive its own folly. Every man of humane convictions must decide on the protest that best suits his convictions. But we must all protest.
Thank you so much, Brother O, for that wonderful track, and it's by Dr. King. Now, talking about the SCLC again, we're going to talk about their tactics and how they put together their protest. So their protests were all non-violent protests, everybody, and they also strategically chose the methods and places in which their protests were held and carried out. And there were several dramatic standoffs with segregational authorities who sometimes turned violent. But guess what? Dr. King and his protesters, they were not violent. And we can see that trend today where we have protests that are nonviolent, and then you have these other people that come and infiltrate the protests, and they become violent and they start rioting and doing other things. However, Dr. King was not a violent protester. Now, sometimes King would be jailed. He was imprisoned many times. He was arrested, everybody. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later, about his arrest. Now, the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, under the directorship of J. Edgar Hoover, he considered King a radical, and again I say radical. So that's the way he saw him, as that radical person. And he made him an object of the FBI's special program that they put together called the Counterintelligence Program that ran from 1956 to 1971. And that program, they were illegal. It was an illegal, covert operation. And what they did, they actively conducted projects by the United States FBI, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and they would do surveillance. They would infiltrate, discredit, and disrupt the domestic American political organizations, such as the Black Panther Party and the Communist Party and the Nation of Islam and the Black Power Movement, and, of course, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So that program didn't last too long. But now listen, while they did this to the organizations that were fighting for justice for black people, they did nothing with that covert operations, what I'm going to call it. They did nothing to stop the white supremacist groups such as the Ku Klux Klan and the far-right group, the National States Rights Party. They did nothing to try to stop their movements, and the KKK is still very prevalent today. And we have to look at this, people, and realize what was going on then is still going on now as far as the inequality of our movements and what we're fighting for. And we have to come together and fight as never before. Now, on October 14th, 1964, Dr. King won the Nobel Peace Prize for combating racial inequality through nonviolent resistance. And we're going to talk more about that. And now with the FBI, the agents that investigated Dr. King for possible communist ties, they spied on his personal life. Does that sound familiar? Okay? And secretly recorded him. The FBI in 1964 mailed King a threatening anonymous letter. Now, they mailed him this letter, and which he interpreted as an attempt to make him commit suicide. So imagine what that letter said, because, see, the FBI, they're so tactical, and they wanted to stop him. They wanted to stop him from his movement because he was making noise, and he was gathering followers everywhere he went. People joined in the movement, both white and black. So he was bringing people together that were usually segregated, and people hated him for that. So after he won that Nobel Peace Prize, in 1965, he helped organize two of the three Selma to Montgomery, Alabama marches. And that was awesome. That was awesome. And then after that, he expanded his focus to include opposition towards poverty. So he fought against poverty, capitalism, and also the Vietnam War. And those are the things that he did. And we're going to talk about more of the stuff he did as well. And then we're going to even talk about things that he did after he was even no longer on this earth. He was still making noise and making progress through what he had already accomplished while he was here. And so in 1968, Dr. King was planning a national occupation of Washington, D.C., to be called the Poor People's Campaign. And the Poor People's Campaign, everybody, that campaign is still operating today in different cities and in different states throughout the country. And as a matter of fact, we had one of our guests on this network a couple years, I think it was last year or maybe in 2021, where that guest has a Poor People's Campaign in Pittsburgh. And so this is still running today. And so many other things that he put in place is still operating today, everybody. And we're going to talk more about that Poor People's Campaign after we take another caller. Caller, you're live on the air. How are you tonight? And welcome to WBNN.
Hello, Dr. Chinchilla.
Uh-oh, Mr. Boston, how are you?
Hey, I'm in the building. I'm at work, you know, so I had to stop in and check in and see what was going on over here. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this WBNN hosted by Dr. Chinchilla. You know, this is Mr. Boston from WBNN, the Boston Chronicles. So I'm not going to say much, but I'm going to do a very short poem, and then I'm going to go to work. Is that okay?
Go ahead, Mr. Boston. Do your thing.
Okay. Honey people, murder, mercy, USA. The milkland turned to monsters. Teach to kill, to violate, pull down, destroy. The weekly freedom growing fruit from being born. America, tomorrow, yesterday, rip, rape, exacerbate, despoil, disfigure. Crazy running threat, the deadly thrall, appall, belief, dispel, the wildlife burn, the beast. The onward tongue, the outward hand deform the normal rainy riot. Sunshine, shelter, wreck of darkness, degrade, delimit, blank, explode, deprive, the raving greed, reactivate springtime. Death by men, by more than you and I can stop. And that's that piece.
Wow. Thank you so much, Mr. Boston. And Mr. Boston has a show on this network as well, everybody. And he is our poet on this network. Tell everyone your next show is, Mr. Boston.
Say that again.
Say that again.
Tell everyone when your next show is.
My show is every first Tuesday of the month, and I will be back in February the first Tuesday, so y'all come out. I got some new work in the works, and you know how that goes, so y'all come out and support WBNN and Ngozi Tai Multimedia and Dr. Chinchilla. Y'all come on out and enjoy this platform, because this platform is very informative and it has a lot of information that you can apply to your life on a daily basis. So y'all come out and enjoy Ngozi Tai and Dr. Chinchilla.
Thank you so much, Mr. Boston. All right, we're going to take another caller now. Caller, you're live on the air. Welcome to Dr. King's 10th annual tribute here on WBNN.
Hi, Dr. Chinchilla. It's Jerry Pacito.
Hi, Jerry. How are you?
I'm good, sweetie. I just love what you're doing tonight.
Well, we love you, too. We love you, too. Yeah, we can hear you loud and clear. We got a little echo, so I'll facilitate.
Okay.
And, of course, Dr. Chinchilla is there. Thanks for calling, Jerry, and go ahead and make your statement tonight about Dr. King.
Okay. I want to say two things that resonate with me. You know, he loved the Lord, and his very last words to his associate, Ben, he was on the balcony, and his associate was in a room getting his things together, and he said, "Ben, play Precious Lord." Those were his last words. So can you imagine how God felt about that when he met him? So to me, that's incredible. He deserves to be in heaven. That man is in heaven. And imagine saying, "Precious Lord," and then die. So I want to share one more thing. Elvis Presley loved Dr. King. And that song that was written, "If I Can Dream," was written after he died for him so Elvis can honor him. And he had someone write it for him to sing for Dr. Martin Luther King. And I just want to let everyone know that I will be interviewing our honeybee, DJ Olasky here, our producer, on Martin Luther King the day he was assassinated, April 4th, on Hamilton Radio, live in studio. So we're going to also honor him that day. But God bless you, Martin Luther King, because I love you. And Dr. Chinchilla, thank you for doing this tonight.
Thank you, Jerry, for calling in and saying what you said tonight. Thank you so much. And so tell everyone when your next show is, Jerry, for February.
I apologize. I'm not home. I'm actually at my daughter's. So I don't have my book with me. But that's not about me tonight. Again, I just thank you so much for doing this.
All right. Thank you so much, Jerry, for calling in, and take care. All right. Next, we are going to have another track by DJ, international DJ, should I say, the legend himself, DJ Olasky.
I discovered then that religion had to become real to me, and I had to know God for myself. And I bowed down over that cup of coffee. I never will again. Oh, yes, I prayed a prayer, and I prayed out loud that night. I said, "Lord, I'm down here trying to do what's right. I think I'm right. I think the cause that we represent is right. Lord, I must confess that I'm weak now, I'm faltering, I'm losing my courage." Seemed at that moment that I could hear an inner voice saying to me, "Martin Luther, stand up for righteousness. Stand up for justice. Stand up for truth. And Lord, I will be with you even until the end of the world." I tell you, I've seen the light. lightning flash. I've heard the thunder roll. I've felt sin breakers dashing, trying to conquer my soul. But I heard the voice of Jesus saying still to fight on. He promised never to leave me, never to leave me alone. No, never alone. No, never alone. Promise never to leave me. Never to leave me alone. Sometimes I feel discouraged. And I don't mind telling you this morning that sometimes I feel discouraged. I felt discouraged in Chicago. I moved through Mississippi and Georgia and Alabama. I feel discouraged. Living every day under the threat of death, I feel discouraged sometimes. Living every day under extensive criticism, even from Negroes, I feel discouraged sometimes. Yes, sometimes I feel discouraged and feel my works in vain. But then the Holy Spirit revives my soul again. There is a balm in Gilead to make the wounded whole. There is a balm in Gilead to heal the sin-sick soul. God bless you.
Thank you so much for that track, an excerpt of Dr. King, DJ Olasky. Now back to the Poor People's Campaign, everybody, because I really want to tell you all about the Poor People's Campaign, which Dr. King was fighting for. And, you know, this was on his way to Memphis, on his way to Tennessee. And this is where they marched, and this is where they were going to form the Poor People's Campaign. They were going to take it to Washington, D.C., and in Memphis, Tennessee. So let me tell you about the Poor People's Campaign. The Poor People's Campaign, and some people call it the Poor People's March on Washington. So that was an effort in 1968, and that effort was to gain economic justice for poor people in the United States. And it was organized, again, as I said, by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and the SCLC, which again is the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. And it was carried out under the leadership of Ralph Abernathy in the wake of King's assassination in April 1968. So here's what happened with those members of the Poor People's Campaign. They carried it on. Although Dr. King was assassinated, they still went forth and carried out his vision for that March on Washington and the Poor People's Campaign. And so the campaign demanded economic and human rights of poor Americans of diverse backgrounds. And they organized and set up demands to Congress and executive agencies. And they participated and set up a group of 3,000 people, everybody. So back then, imagine back then in 1968, okay, they had a group of 3,000 people protesting and camping out on the Washington Mall. They stayed there for 6 weeks in the spring of 1968. Now, not 6 weeks in hotels, okay? They camped out for 6 weeks 6 weeks out there in Washington. And this is something that we don't do today. But they were determined to carry out Dr. King's dream for that march on Washington, D.C., to fight for the poor people in this country. And they did just that. And so that's why I say even in his death, in his assassination, his dream was still being fulfilled. People were still carrying out what he had put in place. And they did just that for 6 long weeks out there in the spring, in the streets, camped out. And this is what they did. And it was motivated by Dr. King and people that felt that this was something that was necessary for economic justice. So now, he didn't just fight for civil rights and freedom, but for economic justice, meaning for you to have some finances today. And so now, black people today, there are jobs that you can get. You can work in many fields today, but some people are just too lazy to work. They don't want to work. They say there are no jobs out there when there are plenty of jobs. And especially now since COVID, there are so many jobs available and so many jobs that you can get now that you don't even have to have the proper education for, because they're desperate. These companies are desperate now for employees. So if you want to work, guess what? You can. But so many people don't want to work. They'd rather stay home. They'd rather stay on video games and on cell phones, just doing things that are useless and pointless. When Dr. King fought for us to have economic rights, and we as a people are not coming together economically, putting our monies together to buy up properties, to buy up blocks of land and property to build our own businesses on, to put our monies together to buy actual land to build upon and to have our own city. Like some people do. They put their money together. They make their own little cities. Okay? We can do that too. If we come together and put our finances together. But we don't. We won't. And why is it? When Dr. King dreamed of us having finances. And he wanted equality for us. Economically. And are we fighting for economic quality? Are we? No, we're not. We're not. We're just happy and settling for the little crumbs and little handouts that are being given to us each year. You know, the government gives little handouts to pacify the black people. And we have to stop having Band-Aids put on our finances and start demanding that we get what we deserve. And stop being afraid, people. We have to come together. We have to fight together. We have to build together. And that's another reason why I love the seven principles of Kwanzaa, because we're talking about economics, okay? And that's one of the principles, you know? Cooperative economics. And are we cooperating economically? No, we're not. And we have to start. We have to start right in our communities, supporting whatever black businesses are in your communities, supporting black online businesses, supporting black businesses outside of your community, and stop crying about the price is too high. Why do you think it's too high? It's too high because we have to pay more for our rents than the white people do, and then the Asians do, then even the Dominicans in the poppy stores. We have to pay more money for the lease than they do. We're not giving opportunities as they are to have a business. Like when people come over, the foreigners come to this country, they're given grant money. And how many of us have applied for grant money to start a business and been denied? So it's unfair. We get the short end of the stick. But guess what? If we band together and demand that we get the big end of the stick, it can be done. And it starts by coming together and building together, supporting each other's businesses, and stop being like Genesis said, crabs in a barrel. And I used to use that all the time, and that's what we're like. We see one person climbing to success, and then we get so envious and jealous. We want to climb up and pull them back down so they can be at the bottom of the barrel like the rest of us, or the rest of you, because I'm not at the bottom of no barrel, and I'm never going to be at the bottom of a barrel, okay? So we need to help each other climb up. Instead of climbing and pulling the others down, we need to climb, pull the next one up, climb, pull the next one up. And if we just keep reaching down and each of us pull the next one up that's under us, guess what? We can rise up on top, people. That's what we have to do. We have to stick together as Dr. King dreamed and envisioned for us. So this is what the Poor People's Campaign was all about. And they were around heavily, you know, during those 6 weeks. And then after that, they still continued to fight, but they camped out for 6 weeks to make a statement that they were serious. How many of us are going to make a statement that we're serious and do something such as they did? We're not talking about a march, a million man's march for one day or a women's march for one day. They stayed there for 6 long weeks. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. All right, now we're going to have another track, and then we're going to have our next caller.
We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. Though I join hands often with students and others behind jail bars singing, we shall overcome. Sometimes we've had tears in our eyes when we joined together to sing it, but we still decided to sing it. We shall overcome. Oh, before this victory's won, some will have to get thrown in jail some more, but we shall overcome. Don't worry about us. Before the victory's won, some of us will lose jobs, but we shall overcome. Before the victory's won, even some will have to face physical death. Physical death is the price that some must pay. But free those children from a permanent psychological death, then nothing shall be more redemptive. We shall overcome. For the victory's won, some will be misunderstood and called bad names and dismissed as rabble-rousers and agitators. But we shall overcome. And I'll tell you why. We shall overcome because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. We shall overcome because Carlyle is right. No lie can live forever. We shall overcome because William Cullen Bryant is right. Truth crushed to earth will rise again. We shall overcome because James Russell Lowell is right. Truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne. Yet that scaffold sways the future. Behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadows, keeping watch above his own. We shall overcome because the Bible is right. You shall reap what you sow. We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. And with this faith, we will go out and adjourn the councils of despair and bring new light into the dark chambers of pessimism. We will be able to rise from the fatigue of despair to the buoyancy of hope. And this will be a great America. We will be the participants in making it so. And so as I leave you this evening, I say, walk together, children. Don't you get weary. There's a great camp meeting.
All right. Thank you so much, Brother O. All right. We're going to go ahead and we're going to take another caller now. Caller, you're live on the air. Welcome to Dr. King's 10th annual tribute to the legacy of his life.
Hey, peace. and abundant divine blessings. You now listen to the tone of voice of the master sound therapist, master sound healer, and the grand architect of the universe. I just want to say thank you so much to Dr. Martin Luther King for being everything that he was. I also want to say that he was the last of the last during that era. I also want to thank him for being a willing sacrifice. And just like a lamb that was led to slaughter, him and many other people that was with him during that day and time, all of us who are descendants from that untimely era have to stop being lambs and transform into a lion. Now, one thing I want to also thank Dr. Martin Luther King for is shining a spotlight, because being a willing sacrifice and being a descendant of the original people who pretty much owned this entire planet Earth, that was given dominion over this entire planet Earth, he did his best to try to reform the evil ones in their time, which is impossible. It's obviously that it's impossible, because now we're looking at 55 years later, with all of that sacrificing, all of that nonviolence against soulless evil people who still are hell-bent on doing what they did and don't have any intentions at all to stop doing what they are just hell-bent on doing, which is our demise. Now, I have a show coming up. Matter of fact, my original show was going to speak about we get more momentum by pushing than pulling. Well, the heavenly beings decided I have to go a different route. And this show that's coming up February 9th, I will be speaking about a rude awakening, addressing the state of ignorance. Sleep time is over. How about recent events? A gunshot to the head. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Brother Hooney. Thank you so much. We're going to take another caller. Call you live on the air. Welcome to our 10th annual tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
Hi, Dr. Chinchilla J. This is Ava Holly. How are you tonight?
I'm fine. How are you, Ava?
I'm hanging in there, and I think you're doing a marvelous job tonight. I got to say that my comments are going to be a little disjointed, but we'll come together at the end. First of all, I was a toddler when Dr. King was assassinated, and we go through and we learn about him. You were talking about his arrests. I believe he was arrested 29 times. What I didn't know that I found out recently was that he was 15 when he went to college, talking about his intelligence.
Yes.
He went to college from 15 to 19 years old. One of the other things and Genesis talked about was people coming together to support their groups. So this is going to tie together at the end, because I'm very happy that Jerry came on and mentioned Elvis, of course, but he was devastated when Dr. King died, and his 68 comeback was the same year that Dr. King was assassinated. And in his song, If I Can Dream, it always sticks out in my head, where all our brothers walk hand in hand. And that was something that resonated with me throughout my life. You know, I was a teenager when Elvis died. So, but when we celebrate Dr. King and what he did, you know, Sister Bessie said, never forget. And we never forget. So now I believe that the country needed Dr. King when he came to fruition, so to say, and God put him there for the country. And I'm not saying we don't have people that do great stuff today, but we need another person, the world the way it is today. We need another person to resonate what he did. And I don't think that there's a day or two that go by that every one of us doesn't enact, reenact, speak, or do something that Dr. King resonated about to save not only individual communities of people, but to save the world. So this is a wonderful platform. And again, as Sister Bessie said, we never forget. So it's such a great honor. This is the 10th anniversary that you guys are doing this. Dr. Chinchilla J, what a wonderful job. And thank you for letting me just speak and give my thoughts.
Thank you so much, Ava. And tell everyone when your next show is, Ava.
My next show is coming up this week. It's actually going to be Wednesday evening, and I will be throwing it down with Mo Garman as we discuss cancer and how we make people aware of what's going on today.
All right. Thank you so much again from you. Thank you. We're going to take another caller. Calling you live on the air. Welcome to WBNN 10th Annual Dr. Martin Luther King Tribute.
Yes, this is Clever One, one half of the Boone Brothers, represented from the Broad Street Bully Shot of Philadelphia, where on Power 99, they done played Happy Birthday by Stevie Wonder about 989 times while we watched The King on PHL 17 back in 1986 when crack came out. But good evening, Dr. Lady Chinchilla.
Good evening. How are you, Cliff?
Yes. This wonderful. And all wonderful voices tonight. You know what I'm saying? I wanted to say some things, but and I'll keep it brief as possible. The first thing I'll say is, you know what I mean, shout out to, you know, all the people, you know what I'm saying, who implemented these methodologies. Because verily, all these years that since he been dead, you know what I mean, people, I've noticed that people have been worshiping this man. And opposed to worshiping him, I think people by now, we would have had thousands of one of him by now. How many years have been? So what I'm saying is, people, pay attention to the methodologies in which this man, you know, with the things that he did, his infiltrations and things like that. You know what I mean? Furthermore, I wanted to say this, connected to that. You know what I'm saying? Let's take, for instance, in during Vietnam, let's take, for instance, had they not been pulling black men out of their homes to send them to war, would we would have been complaining about that? Would we would have been complaining that we weren't good enough to go to war for these people? Would that would have been happening? That's the question. I also wanted to elaborate on what Genesis said as far as, you know, the communities and, you know, how we come together and don't come together, where you have other ethnic groups, ethnicities coming together. Of course, they're melanated. But what I'm saying is the black people in which she speaks of today that are not organized out here, it's sad that it's groups of us who do not know who we are because we lost the culture. These groups that we see today being organized and being together, they stick to their cultures. You know what I'm saying? So we're kind of a lost culture type of people. When you're lost, you ain't gonna never get together. Everybody running around in the maze. But I just wanted to go ahead and touch points on that, you know what I'm saying? And this is another thing. Dr. King, you know what I'm saying? You know, shout out to his family and all of these things. And if we wanted to take it on the religious aspects of things, you know what I mean? The first thing we should be speaking of and paying attention to are the court, are the laws and the courts systems, you know what I'm saying, in the Bible, you know what I'm saying? And of course, this country doesn't abide by any of that, you know what I'm saying? And furthermore, to understand what's in the Bible, you're supposed to take the narrow path, meaning you're supposed to migrate from the evil, you know what I'm saying? If you want to fight against them, fight them, you know what I'm saying? But, and lastly, I think I'll be coming up on the 25th. I'm Clever One, one half of the Booze Brothers, representing from the Broad Street Bully side of Philadelphia, where we just going to listen back and stack some bricks up and stand some sticks up. Check your satellites.
Unmuted.
All right. Thank you so much, Clever One. We're going to go ahead and take another caller now. Caller, you live on the air. Welcome to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s 10th annual Celebration of Life.
Hi, Dr. Chinchilla. How are you today? This is Tiana Speaks.
Hi, Tiana. How are you?
I'm doing great. So first, I want to say a few things. I want to say that the show is absolutely amazing. It's powerful. It's dynamic. You're doing such a great job. I'm just feeling the vibe from all the hosts calling in, you know, and I want to say something to Brother O. I have someone special that is right here with me who, you know, heard the Tupac, you know, changes along with Dr. His voice over, you know, and he said, whoever the DJ is, he said, that's an art, you know. He doesn't know anything about this, you know, like, but I thought that was absolutely amazing to hear both together, you know, because it does, you know, make a difference, you know. But what I want to say is this. I always think about my legacy, right, and what I leave behind. And I always say I want to make a difference. I wanted my voice to make a difference, you know. And I would say the most powerful time for me to do this on WBNN. Is on WBN, excuse me, and I wanted my name to be known, you know, and when I think about, you know, him, it's like that is really my inspiration behind, like, my legacy. This man is 94 years, you know, it's been 94 years since he was born, right, and he's still powerful. He's still in our mouths. He's still prevalent today, and he's still, like, is in our hearts, our minds, and our souls. That's what I strive to be, you know, to this world. Does, like, no matter what the skin color is, I strive to be there to this world. And I just think it's amazing that right now, like, everyone on this network, we all have the power to be. And we may never be as great as him, but we definitely have a power to be, you know. So I am proud to be a part of this family. I admire you. I admire Brother O and the things that you guys do, because, you know, what other radio station might just do this just because, oh, it's just a day to them and this is what they feel like they're obligated to do. But I know this station is doing this because we care. We know it matters. We know it's important to get the message out, you know. So I just say that I think you both are wonderful, and everyone on this entire station is absolutely wonderful. And, you know, I am glad that – I'm sorry, I hear echo in the background. But I am just glad that, you know, this is a show that's being done, and everybody gets to share their points. And this man is an absolutely powerful individual who will go on, even if we're – every single one of us, we take our last breath. This man is still going to be important. His legacy is still going to be here. He's still going to matter. So no matter if you hate him or no matter if you love him, you're going to know who he is, you know. So I would say, on top of that, my next show is January 26th, and it's The Power of Thoughts. And the way that he spoke, you know, in the same way, it's like changing the hearts and the minds of many to be able for all of us to come together. And in speaking, we should uplift each other no matter what we do in this world. If you see your brother or your sister struggling, you're supposed to pull them up, you know. And I had this conversation with someone the other day. You know, a lot of times we gloat on our success, but you see your sister or your brother struggling, you don't want to help pull them up, because collaboration equals multiplication. You both can do good together. And a lot of times our mentalities is what really holds us down. We have too much hate in our heart, you know, and not enough love. So, you know, January 26th, The Power of Thoughts, 9:30 p.m., you know, and I know you'll be listening, Dr. Chinchilla, and thank you for giving me your time.
Unmuted.
Yes, I will definitely be listening to your show, Tiana. Thank you so much for all your comments and everything, and we definitely appreciate you, and we will be tuning in to your show. We're going to take another caller now. Caller, you're live on the air with WBNN's 10th annual Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s tribute.
Hi, Chinchilla. This is Mo Garman calling from Philadelphia. I wanted to call in and support this 10th anniversary show. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. First of all, we want to, you know, send a shout-out to Blog Talk Radio tonight for their, you know, negligence on the lines. you know, trying to block, you know, Dr. Chinchilla J, so I got to come in and make sure that things are relatively great. That's my job.
Okay.
So you go ahead and continue to talk at this time, and then I'll bring back on Dr. Chinchilla J with her final thoughts, and then it goes your time.
I just wanted to comment on Martin Luther King. Speaking of supporting each other, you mentioned supporting each other. Did you know that Gandhi was searching for spirituality, and he met with some people that turned him away from Christianity because he was Indian? Now, I find that ironic because thank goodness Dr. King had the wisdom to see what Gandhi was teaching, his spiritual values, and he applied those teachings and philosophy to Christianity, and that's how he ended up helping with the civil rights movement here. So I just think that he had Martin Luther King had vision, and he had foresight to see the value in another person, no matter who they were. So I thought that was something that we should bring up too, that we shouldn't just discount people just because they're different. We can learn from each other, just like Martin.
You know what? I really appreciate that, Mo Garvin, because a lot of times Dr. King's message was screwed. A lot of people don't understand, you know, between 1966 and 1968, this was a different man.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think that Dr. King was, you know, passive. But he learned that, you know what, I'm tired of being passive. You know, when he met with, you know, Elijah Muhammad, a lot of people don't know that, huh? And the people he met with before his untimely demise, you know, things are a little different. And fighting for all poor people to bring forth Appalachian whites, Native Americans, Hispanics, as well as, you know, the plight of, you know, American Africans. That's the greatest gift that we have from Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So I want to thank you so much for calling to the show tonight. And, when is your next show?
My next show is January the 27th, Breaking the Silence with Mo Garman, and we'll be discussing how to be a better person in 2023.
Thank you so much, Mo. Now, of course, again, you know, this is a sacred night, and the powers that be try to influence the lines of my great commissioner, and you need to be ashamed of yourself. You need to be ashamed of yourself. So guess what? I'm the great facilitator because I'm a god, and guess what? I do things in perfect order. So we're going to give it back to Dr. Chinchilla J, uninterrupted with no noise in the background, no interference on the lines. Because you know why? This young lady has done yeoman's work for our network, period. And I will not allow this entity to disrespect her. Because we have callers on the line tonight. They want to speak with her. And you interfere with the lines on the federal holiday of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I'm making a call to you in New York tomorrow. You will hear my voice. You know what W Nation means to you? Stop playing with me. Now back to our fifth branding commissioner for her great thesis and her final thoughts before I come on with Ngozi time. And she will announce me accordingly. Hey, Chinchilla, go at it.
Okay, thank you so much, Brother O. Wow. Now, we're going to talk about that Memphis, Tennessee, again, when Dr. King went to Tennessee. And, again, he was planning that movement for the Poor People's Campaign. They went there to plan that march on Washington. And there in Memphis on April the 3rd, Dr. King gave his final speech, and it was a great speech. And if we look at what Dr. King said in that speech, it was like he, you know, knew that he was going to die. And it was a sad time there in Memphis, but he gave his final speech, and of course he was assassinated the next day, April 4th, 1968, he was shot. And after his death, riots broke out all over the country. lots of leaders, civil rights leaders. Now the enemy's trying to mess with my voice, but the devil is a liar because I will speak this truth. They gathered together. They were so upset. They were mourning, and people were rioting all over the country because this great man, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., was assassinated because of what he stood for, what he fought for, and what he was planning to do next. And they killed him. And people were upset. So if we look at what happened when George Floyd was murdered by the racist cop, Derek Chauvin. He was murdered. And riots broke out all over the country, all around the world. People were upset. So people were upset about Dr. King being assassinated. Even people around the world that believed in equality and believed that blacks should have rights that we did not have. So what happened at that time? Well, the president became fearful and the vice president became fearful. They were all fearful as to what was going to happen in this country after the assassination of Dr. King. So they tried to contact the civil rights leaders, tried to plead with them to, you know, to get people under control and this and that. And, you know, when something happens, it's next to impossible to get people under control. If people are infuriated and passionate about something, you can't control that, okay? So they could not control what people were out there doing. And it was a sad day. And I was about I wasn't quite five yet. I was 4 and a half, well, almost five because my birthday was in August. So I was 4 years old. Assassination. And it's ridiculous, people, because he was such a great man. He should not have been assassinated, but he was because of what he stood for. And he was shot fatally by James Earl Ray at 6:01 p.m. Thursday, April the 4th, 1968, as he stood on the motel's second floor balcony. And it's such a sad thing. It's still sad to this very day. And we honor him every year, honoring his legacy because he was such a great man. But in the aftermath of his death, of his assassination. So the riots, they were in Washington, Chicago, Baltimore, Louisville, Kansas City, Philadelphia, Indianapolis, all over. They rallied, they protested, they rioted because they loved Dr. King as we all still love him today. And Lyndon B. Johnson, who was the president at that time, again, he made several calls to civil rights leaders, to mayors, to governors, and all other types of political people that had position in this country, trying to get them to stop the riots. And they warned the police, and they wanted to use force. So that's what they started trying to do. But as we move on, during Dr. King's funeral, Vice President Hubert Humphrey attended that funeral on behalf of the president at that time, and they feared that his presence was going to incite protests because of him attending, that people would start rioting there and protesting there, but you know, things were pretty peaceful at that funeral, during the funeral. And the thing that I find very intriguing at Dr. King's funeral was that he had given a sermon on February the 4th, 1968, which was his last sermon at Ebenezer Baptist Church. And during that funeral, his funeral, his wife, Coretta Scott King, asked them to play that sermon. And that sermon was played. And in that sermon that Dr. King preached February 4th, 1968 at Ebenezer Baptist Church, he made a request that at his funeral, there would be no mention of his awards, of his honors, of his accolades, or anything else that would, like, you know, like boost him up as an individual. He didn't want any of that stuff to be mentioned, nothing about his education, nothing about anything else other than, this is what he said, that he wanted mentioned about him at his funeral, that he tried to feed the hungry. He clothed the naked, and he was against the Vietnam War in question because he thought it was better to love and serve humanity. And he had his good friend, Mahalia Jackson, sing his favorite hymn, Take My Hand, Precious Lord. And that assassination of Dr. King, it helped to spur the enactment of the Civil Rights Act of 1968. And now, as we talk about Dr. King's final speech on April the 3rd, which was a speech like none other, as I said, he knew that he was going to die. And it said so in that speech. We can tell by what he said. And the speech is, I've been to the mountaintop. And so I am going to just read a part. You can tell that Dr. King knew that he was about to die. And
Hey, doctor, I do have the speech right here queued up. And I want everybody to hear this speech right now. And then I'm going to go into Ngozi time with my final thoughts. You know what I mean? And then we'll let the good doctor give her final thoughts for this wonderful evening. Dr. King.
All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper. If I lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges because they haven't committed themselves to that over there. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest for rights. And so just as I say we aren't going to let any dogs or water hoses turn us around, we aren't going to let any injunction turn us around. Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over. And I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you. But I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Tonight, there will be no advertisement. This is a true testament to the history of a man that walked among us and just loved everybody. He loved everybody so well that when he talked to people, he made it so that it wasn't about him. It was about the people that was worth it. He wasn't a superstar. He was an average man doing extraordinary work. Tonight, I'm going to give you, with these hands of mine, a testament provided by the children of Gary, Indiana, who grew up to become the Jacksons. This is my master mix. I usually say I don't want like to play the I Have a Dream speech, but tonight I'm moved. So listen to these hands as we provide Free at Last. And all the folks out there in this world, listen to the song and the way Michael Jackson sings it in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King. And after that, we'll give you the 2022 WBNN Host of the Year, for her final thoughts, Dr. Chinchilla J.
The Drum Major Instinct.
I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. My poor little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character.
Is it in the air, the wind is
singing the words of the old Negro spiritual. Free at last, free at last.
Thank you so much, Brother L. Free at last, everybody. And are you really free today? Are you free? Are you free? I thank you all so much for listening tonight to WBNN's 10th annual Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s Celebration of Life, Celebration of His Legacy, our 10th annual tribute to him. Now, that's a little recap and some things that I say for the end to mention to you guys. And he's great. He will always be great. He's no longer alive, but he still lives on in all of us who are fighting for justice and carrying out his dream and his vision. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., he was born into a house of religion and activism. His father, born Michael King, and also Dr. King, was born Michael as well, into his father, changed both their names to Martin Luther. And he was also a preacher. He was a devout Christian and a Baptist minister. And he was also an activist, a civil rights activist. So King, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., followed in his father's footsteps and took that even further, as we all should do. If we have parents that are good role models for us to model after, we should be modeling after our parents and furthering what they've done, because most parents want to see their children do even greater things than they do. And so that's what Dr. King did. And yes, as I said in the beginning, he was very intelligent. At the age of 15, he started college, Morehouse College, which was an historically black, all-male, black school. And he graduated at the age of 19 with a BA in sociology. And then he went on and got other degrees as well in theology and a couple other things as well. Then in 1953, he married Coretta Scott, who became Coretta Scott King. They married in Alabama and had four children. And Dr. King did so many wonderful things. And as I said earlier tonight, that the FBI and other governmental groups were angry with Dr. King for what he stood for. So yes, he was arrested. He was arrested many, many times, 29 times he was arrested. And during the Birmingham, Alabama campaign of 1963, he was arrested for the 13th time on purpose. He wanted them to arrest him. And he wanted people to see that these occupied public spaces, that they wanted to protest against segregation, hoping that the mass arrests would provoke negotiations with officials. And from his jail cell, he composed the now famous letter from Birmingham Jail. And that's what it's called. Letter from Birmingham Jail. And he rejected calls to pursue legal channels for social change, referencing the illegal and revolutionary 1773 Boston Tea Party. Dr. King was one of the best orators in modern history. And on August 23rd, 1963, in the year that I was born, between 200,000 and 300,000 people marched on Washington, D.C., advocating for the civil and economic rights of black Americans. King was the event's final speaker that day, and that's where he gave his I Have a Dream speech on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial, describing the dreams of equality within a land built upon slavery and inequity. March on Washington, that march for jobs and freedom, was one of the largest political rallies in United States history and was influential in passing the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And again, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated on Thursday, April 4th, 1968. And that assassination spurred the passing of the landmark 1968 Civil Rights Act and a legacy of civil rights activism. What are you doing today? Are you activating? Are you being a voice? Are you advocating for anything, for social change, for civil rights, for economic rights, for equality? Are you advocating for wrongful incarcerations? Are you advocating for any type of injustice, fighting against injustice, such as Dr. King did? He fought and fought and fought against injustices in America. He fought that you may be free, black man, that you may be free, black woman. But are you free? Are you truly free? Have you arrived yet? From then to now, has anything changed in you, in your history, in your genealogy, in the generations that have come down through your family from the time that Dr. King fought for our rights from 1955 to 2023? Has anything changed? That's a question that you must answer for yourself and ask yourself. And if the answer is no, then you need to find out a way that you can make a change, because change starts with you. I am Dr. Chinchilla Jonesia, Commissioner of WBNN, and it was my honor tonight to host and narrate our 10th annual Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s celebration of life and his legacy. Our tribute to you, Dr. King. We love you. May you continue to rest in power. Good night. I am Dr. Chinchilla J. Remember to always be a voice.
One day after finishing school, I was called to a little church down in Montgomery, Alabama. And I started preaching there. Things were going well in that church. It was a marvelous experience. One day, a year later, a lady by the name of Rosa Parks decided that she wasn't going to take it any longer. She stayed on a bus seat. You may not remember it because it's way back now, several years, but it was the beginning of a movement where 50,000 black men and women refused absolutely to ride the city buses, and we walked together for 381 days.
Yes, sir.
That's what we got to learn in the North. The Negroes have to learn to stick together. We stuck together. Sent out the call. No Negro rode the buses. It was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in my life. The people of Montgomery asked me to serve as the spokesman. And as the president of the new organization, the Montgomery Improvement Association, that came into being to lead the boycott, I couldn't say no. Then we started our struggle together. Things were going well for the first few days, but then about 10 or 15 days later, after the white people in Montgomery knew that we meant business, They started doing some nasty things. They started making nasty telephone calls and came to the point that some days more than 40 telephone calls would come in threatening my life, the life of my family, the life of my children. I took it for a while in a strong manner. I never will forget one night very late. It was around midnight. And you can have some strange experiences at midnight. I had been out meeting with the steering committee all that night. I came home. My wife was in the bed and I immediately crawled into bed to get some rest, to get up early the next morning to try to keep things going. And immediately, the telephone started ringing and I picked it up. On the other end was an ugly voice.